I'm very impressed by your broad interest in this subject. I didn't expect that. But I was asked in the last week, since I came here to the USA and stayed here in Holden Village, very often when I spoke or told that I live in Berlin, how I would feel or how I experienced the last couple of years. And as I know from my profession, I'm teaching at university mass media, how the role of the mass media, newspapers, television, and so on, how they work, how they affect interest. I thought it might be an interesting thing to tell the other side, the other story, that what is not the news, what is everyday life, what is the effect of the events on the people, because that's not a matter of politics, unfortunately, nowadays, very often, at least it isn't. I gotta say first that everybody is invited to join in with all feelings, knowledge, experiences he or she has had in any of the circumstances. I have heard from many who spoke to me in the last week that they have relatives there, that they have been to Berlin before or after the wall fall down. And I want that everybody might share his or her feelings and experiences. So whenever you feel like, I won't be feeling interrupted in a way, and I would like it very much. The other thing is that I'm not very familiar to your language, as you might have found out already. And so you might be sometimes curious, what the heck does he mean by that? So let's take it like a game, you know, like a quiz or so, however. you just try to figure what he might mean. And if your neighbor doesn't know, and the other neighbor doesn't know as well, don't ever hesitate to ask me, because so many things I'm not familiar to talk about in English. I'm not familiar to talk about these kind of things anyway. So that might be useful then if you just interrupt me and ask. The last thing I have to say beforehand is that the main problem is how to get these 2 years somehow on the point, how to talk about so many things. You know, the specialty of everyday life is that it is so overwhelming large, it takes all the time, and it's just different to those few minutes you listen to the television or you read in the newspapers. So I try to structure very little the things I was going to tell or I would like you to speak about and to share. I will put an emphasis on the history line, what was happening after what, and on the other point I try to get involved a little or talk a little about what is the role of the church, the arts, the artists, the environments, what happened with the culture, what was the mass media, what with the economics, labor, social problems, and so on, so that I try to get a very broad impression of it. It's too soft? Okay. The main thing why I'm going to tell this is the basic idea that the only thing we can learn from history is that we don't learn from history. And even though I think we should talk about these things, just imagine, however it comes, the United States of America would be invaded from the north, from Canada, and from the south, from Mexico, for good reasons. And there would be some kind of new border right through the middle of the states, let's say from Oregon through Iowa, Chicago, up to New York. And New York would be divided into two halves. That was the situation what we found after the Second World War. And it was a good situation. I would evaluate it so nowadays. But it was a very strange situation. And it meant that the same would happen as now it happened to Cuban people who have been there living 40 years in the States, in Florida. They keep to their culture and they keep to their languages. They don't change. And the same happened to East Germany. Even though there was built up a different system, there were relatives from East and West. Brothers and sisters were divided. And I have to tell that beforehand, because you might wonder, how does it work that after that long time, two countries join together at once? Is there any sense in it? And I think those are basically the reasons that politicians and many people even thought about this idea that two countries could become one again. But however, it is not a reunion, it is something different. The history of this, what is called in the magazines, reunification, and what actually was that the counties of East Germany somehow joined in to the Federal Republic of Germany. And this difference tells very much about the situation for the people of East Germany. So this started somehow in August 1989, as you might remember, I just want to recall it, when they had the celebration of the 40th anniversary of the German Democratic Republic, and when people started to wonder about the sentences said by Mikhail Gorbachev. I tried to translate it this way: who's too late will be punished by life. It might sound a bit strange, but some who were able to listen and to think it over found out what he meant when he spoke this way to Erich Honecker. So more and more people started to wonder. They say, what is going on? We follow somehow the politics of the Soviet Union, but the Soviet Union changes, we don't. There must be something wrong in this situation. So very many people moved then from the holiday sites in Hungary, Czechoslovakia, to the West German embassies in order to ask to be put into West Germany instead of returning to their homes. They left flats, cars, all their goods behind, because there was a quick decision. And as more people went to this embassy, as more people heard about it, and as more people joined in. So very soon we had a situation where it was really strange for those embassies, and what gave some first pressure on the politicians in East and West Germany.
Perhaps it's important that the Eastern newspapers and television and so on try to keep it down and say nothing about it, but because of the situation that all people in the DDR could also hear the Western radio and see the television, so they heard about it, and so really they, many people ran to the West German embassies, and then also in East Berlin.
Yeah, that's a very important effect, which you just pointed out. The effect of the mass media was really broad, and it comes even more important when we speak of the 9th of November, then when the wall actually fall somehow. But it's good that you bring me to that point. Just imagine, in East Germany they built up a different television system in order to make it difficult for the people who live in East Germany to watch Western television, even though it was so easy to broadcast it all over the country. And there have been only a few places in East Germany what couldn't receive the signal of television. And it might sound funny, but from those areas, the wish to move to the West was always the highest. So after a while, the government even put cable television to those regions in order to let them see what they didn't want them to see, to make them not to want to go to the West. because of course Western television shows very much of the problems what we have, and so the dream becomes more real. However, so this situation turned out, and now we come to the point, actually what I want to put the emphasis on, what I'm telling about, is that very often the thoughts and the feelings of the people from East Germany were put aside, because West Germany is a strong side, they make the politics, they influence it all. And one point is, which is the actual day of liberty for East Germany. And we all think it's the 9th of November, and now Eastern German people agreed in it. But as a matter of fact, those who were really involved in it would say it was the 9th of October, because that was when the so-called Monday demonstrations started in Leipzig. When people joined together on the streets and overcome their fear and just said, we want to show up that this is not going to be like it, and this is not going to be further on like it was before. This must be changed. And all they wanted was, first, the freedom to travel wherever they wanted to and to speak loudly what they thought. And these two things, I found out from the relatives I have and the friends I had in East Germany, and I've been the last 20 years very often in the East. These two things were actually those what really bothered them, what they were missing in their country. For East German people, just to recall it to those who know it and to tell it to those who don't. East German people could travel without a visa only in one country in the world, to the Czechoslovakia. Even to Russia, to Hungary, to Poland, they had to have a visa, some kind of invitation or whatever. They already had problems and struggled to go there. And so you probably will be able to be sensitive to agree in that this became a real broad desire, especially for young people. The other thing is that more and more in East German society, they were building up two languages, both German, of course. One was the official language, which uses all the terms what were put on by those mass media means, what were all one channel, by newspapers, television, and so on. What was the official language, what is very much engaged with the system. And we got already a dictionary about 6,000 words, a vocabulary of 6,000 words, translation from German to German that West German would understand what these East German terms would mean. But there was a second language, that was the everyday language, and people would be able to switch at once, even though they were on their own, between those two languages. They would talk officially, like to colleagues of some place where they work, and all of a sudden they switch into the other language and keep talking about their private wishes, desires, experiences, or whatever. And this second language is somehow the same as it was before, and so more similar to the West German language, if you want so. I call it languages even though they are not, but I guess you will get to understand the point.
But were they not speaking regular German at first in East Germany, or were they required to talk something that was Russian or something similar?
No. They as far as I know, I'm not an historian, but as far as I don't know, there was never the idea to change the language, the official language. Of course, the politics were, as in West Germany, our first foreign language we learn in school is English, so it was of course Russian there. And I know by experience also from other East European countries that as more they were forced to learn Russian, as more they hated it. And that I have friends in Hungary who told me that they learned in 1 or 2 years English or German, they learned more about that languages than in 7 years of Russian. So you see how much motivation is related to learning and to teaching. However, so this 9th of October, these demonstrations started, and something marvelous happened. what nobody actually expected. They didn't use really the force of the Stasi, what is the security system of state. And we heard later that they had 109,000 people belonging to this group. Imagine there would be, how much would there be? About 5% of the American population would be belonging to the CIA. Just, you know, to watch and to listen what is who telling whom about what subject and so on. A very strange situation. So that's why we have these two languages in East Germany.
Why do you think the security forces were not brought to bear? Why do you think the security forces were not used to repress?
Yeah, that's what nobody expected. Well, they wanted to go, and of course there was also the Volkspolizei, the police of the people. What is always quoted in East Germany when they speak, of course, because that was never the police of the people. Though they were really surprised, you know, they didn't expect this, because never things like that has happened before in 1953 there was once the strong desire and what was forced down with military force. So the head of the police in Leipzig decided not to force in. And so there was just the Stasi, who wasn't informed about that, they took prisoners about, I don't know, let's say 1,000 people or 2,000 people. Which were most of them were then set free the next morning again because of the strong power of people.
But that's also important. They in the prisons they were really cruel, the Stasi, to the people there in prison, and some had to stay for 24 hours on the wall with the legs and the arms on the wall, and something like this was really.
Well, that's its own history, of course, how the Stasi worked, and I could tell you a lot of terrifying stories, but then we would, I guess, get too far away from the subject for tonight. So, watching on my clock, I think we should now move to the 9th of November, when the wall was actually falling. And I personally experienced it that way, that I'm used to work late and I turned on the TV after midnight and saw on the television all of a sudden pictures in all the channels just showing a camera pointed on those very few gateways between East and West. And there were people moving. And on the other side there were people standing and clapping their hands and welcoming people, throwing flowers at them. And I thought, what's going on? What actually was happening was that about 1 or 2 hours earlier, there was an announcement from a person who would be, well, he was in charge of a job what Fitzwater would do here. And he was reading an announcement without knowing what he was reading. And he was also reading something what was planned. So there was kind of misunderstanding on this paper, what means that from now on everybody will be allowed to travel wherever he wants to. And it will be valid from midnight, but it was half an hour later. So again, mass media, especially the television, became very, very important. Because people who saw that in the East German television, and after these demonstrations started, people, the news of the East German television had a tendency of at least 10 times as much as before. That was 1% of the population watching it before, or 2%. Now it was rising up to 15, 20, and after the 9th of November up to about 50%. Because now these news became the important mean. Beforehand it was just propaganda. Now it became the important mean to get informed what's going on. And those people who were watching it by chance or however, they thought this can't be. They didn't believe it. They thought it's well, they couldn't make up their minds what it might mean. So some of them who were living close to the wall in Berlin just walked there and said, let's have a look. And then they pushed somehow to the gate, to the border. And those people who were in charge there, they were, you know, they were impressed because they haven't got any order to let them free. They didn't know anything about it, and now all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, thousands of people gathering, you know, and said, we want to go over. We will be back in half an hour. Just let us look, you know. And that's the way it actually happened. I said, why don't you open it? I mean, come with us. And they opened it and went through and said, well, this looks different, but not as nice as we thought. And they but then, while after while, this was, as I said, broadcasted also, not also, but especially in the West German television. So more and more people got knowledge about this fact and moved over and gathered together in the center of West Berlin, what is the Kudamm, the Kurfürstendamm, a broad road just in the center of the city, what has maybe three lanes for both directions and a pedestrian area as broad as at least two or three lanes as well on both sides, and in the middle a very broad, so let's say altogether about 12 lanes, and over 1.5 kilometers, some hours later, you could lift up your legs without falling down. Yeah. It was so crowded. So many people just go there, and all those shops on the next days and started to give anything what they want for the East German money, what has got about no value for West Germans. It was rate is 1 to 20 about that. And they said, you just pay your East Mark and get your coffee and your chocolate. McDonald's was, there were huge piles of these packages of McDonald's in front of any of those McDonald's shops in Berlin. Huge, it's amazing. The whole town where no persons were standing was rubbish, you know, all shops and things. And it was such an atmosphere, you wouldn't believe it. People were dancing and were crying and singing, gathering together. For me, it was, I didn't go there actually at the first day, and I didn't feel very happy because I thought this is so overwhelming. How can I react? How can I, you know, emotionally follow this situation? Let's settle down first, and what does this all mean? And will this be good for us? Will this be good for them? Is that really that what they wanted? But then it rang at my door, and a couple of relatives who have been living maybe 1 kilometer away from me, but never in their life been able to move these couple of hundred meters over. They were just standing there and say, hello Henning, here we are. So what we did, we just went to the Kudamm, because that's what they wanted. We bought ice cream, we were eating hot dogs or whatever, you know, and just joined the people there. It was so interesting to watch them, even though it might sound a bit strange, but to feel, you know, how they react on capitalism. what was their first interest, you know, and it might surprise you. The first things they were really watching for were car shops, motorcycles, and they were wondering about peep shows in West Berlin. I never have seen people standing in line so long at peep shows. It was amazing.
What is your impression? You said the gentleman came on the television and he made an announcement that travel would be free. What do you think that the Central Eastern government was trying to get across? What was their intention for this? Were they trying to open the border? What were they trying to do as opposed to what actually happened?
Okay. The thing was, they wanted to make everybody travel with a special visa or permit. They wanted them to get first a passport. Nobody of them had a passport. Only a very few who have been, you know, very high in the in politics, belonging to the party and following the rules, or being sportspersons who were be allowed to move out. So they wanted, actually, as Germans always do, organize it very well, you know, making passports. In 5 weeks you get yours, in 10 weeks you get yours, and then you two might go over to West Berlin these couple of hundred meters. But first then you join in that queue, and that stand in that line to get that stamp, and then you move over there and get that sign, and then he has to sign it after that, and then you go over there. So that's the way they wanted it. And that's the way they did it before, when we tried to visit them. We had month before we had to ask for permission, we had to have an invitation, and usually you get the permission to move in a few hours before you were supposed to leave your home, you know, when everything was packed already. So that's what they wanted. And the reason was that the pressure, the international pressure, became so high because all these embassies all over East European countries and capitals have been so overcrowded. Imagine there will be some 10,000 people in an embassy place, but is maybe as big as a fifth of Holden Village. And so they had to stand all over the night to wait that somebody will get up from his tent, that they could sleep a couple of hours. You know, they were sharing maybe two toilets, some 9,000 people or 10,000 people. So the pressure became stronger and stronger. And then a few days before this happened, they agreed that all those from the embassy would be allowed to move by train, and now there comes a stupid point, through East Germany into West Germany, and somehow will be released to stay there. And it must have been for those people living in Dresden, where the train was passing by, it must have been perhaps the most terrible moment in their lives to see people traveling there through, maybe their neighbors, in a train what they wouldn't be allowed to enter, to a country where they wanted to go all their lives. And where they will, everybody knew, when I'm 65, I will go there, because not earlier I will be allowed to go to the West. And so strange things they did, and so no wonder that in these towns like Leipzig and Dresden, people got more and more anxious and angry about it. So our foreign minister was able a few days before to announce that all they will be set free, if you want so, and will be allowed to travel to West Germany. The people were so incredibly happy that they have shown this announcement hundreds of times in the television. It was always overwhelming everybody. So I think nobody, either in East or in West Germany, has not seen this specific moment. And so the East German government was somehow put so much under pressure that they just had to, in order to make sure that not the whole population will move away via Hungary or Poland, they just say, okay, we give them the freedom to travel, but everything else will remain. That was the intention. And it was just a mistake that he announced it before it was organized, you know, and prepared somehow. And people just moved there and took the chance. And it is, I think it's very, very interesting thing how this really happens. Yeah. Okay.
What was the main reason that the East German government didn't want to give this free access to cross over the line?
Before?
Yeah, before.
Well, because I think it's very, very easy to describe. What happened in the next 8 or 10 weeks is that 1 million people moved out of East Germany. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
They were all in prison, you might say, in this East Germany.
It was the biggest zoo in the world, and the most expensive one.
Yeah. Have they moved back 50% of them?
No. Even more moved over then, and because, you know, they had a different approach to work, and they had very many people who were working in a special they were, oh, I don't know the English term for it, they were specialized somehow to their work, you know, working with special machines or special tools or special materials. And these kind of persons were missing in West Germany. So all of them, or most of them, got immediately a job, or very soon a job, and would earn very much money very quickly. So most of them who moved over were basically men, young, usually young men, and mostly young people at all, who didn't, you know, feel so much bounded to their own country.
I still don't understand the first reason why the people started.
The German Democratic Republic, because then they continued repeating the same things, the same lines, the same propaganda, what they have said 40 years before. And nothing has changed. Almost nothing really had happened in meanwhile. All the promises were not kept. And then they make the celebration, and in Russia, in Hungary, everywhere there were changes. There came up these names like Perestroika and Glasnost. There was all the hope with Mikhail Gorbachev. And then, as I just said, he was invited to this celebration, and it was quite strange. Erich Honecker used to do very long speeches. As a matter of fact, the news in East Germany take half an hour, and at least 25 minutes you will see Erich Honecker. It's not exaggerating. I measured it a couple of times. And the fact was then that you see him holding this speech, and lots of terms what you use very often, like the German Democratic Republic, which is quite a long term. He used to speak in a way, you know, as somebody who has to say it millions of times and doesn't really want to pronounce it. And you see, there was some camera angle. You saw Mikhail Gorbachev talking to some of his neighbors. They weren't listening at all. They were laughing, exchanging jokes or whatever, and not listening at all. And before Gorbachev left, he said this important sentence, "Who's too late, you know, to change things, to follow the times that passes by." That person will be punished by life.
So this made them think
They said it is ridiculous. They say all the Russians, the Hungarians, the Polish people have hope now. Mm-hmm. You know, in Poland they had elections. The Solidarność became, you know, somehow accepted a few years before. Lech Wałęsa even become president now, meanwhile. So he was in a very strong position already at those days. Every country was eager to change. You know, how the situation is now is Cuba. Cuba is the last country who would remain the way it is. It's a different subject. I won't say that Cuba has to change totally. I've been there last year for quite a while, and I know very much about the situation, and I agree with many things what are done there, even though it might offend you. But, you know, in East Germany, things had to be changed totally, but they didn't. And that was the point.
So the Hungarian embassies wouldn't have let them go to West Germany unless there'd been that many of them?
They couldn't.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't the Hungarian embassy, it was the West German embassy where they went to. In Hungary, and actually in those days Hungary cut off the wires of the fence, so Hungary set those his or her people free as well, even though Hungarians were allowed to travel to West every second year and every first year when they had relatives in the West, so they had the freedom and they stayed in their country. I mean, it was a little easier because Hungary is a country of its own, with its own language, its own culture. There would be no place where Hungarians could go as long as they would like, you know, to stay somehow to their culture. But with East and West Germany it was different, because you don't have to do almost nothing, you know. The language is the same, the work is the same, you can communicate immediately. And so that's why they were afraid of that they will all go away if they open the border. And that was happened up to the day when the wall was built up, and that was the reason why the wall was built up. Because they say, we don't want to spoil the opportunity to build up a socialist country. And they did it at the first time, they really had good reasons for that. You know, I wouldn't say, probably you wouldn't say that this is the right mean to build up a new kind of society. But they found out, if we don't put a fence around the country, there will be nobody left to build up this new society we dream of. That's a point, yeah.
I've got two things. Is it correct, to summarize your statement, is it correct that Gorbachev indirectly led to unification via that one statement? Is that a fair thing to say?
I wouldn't go that far, but I would say he meant there has to be changes in this country. East Germany shall not remain as it is now. There has to be perestroika and glasnost as well, and Erich Honecker didn't react on this.
Okay. But the second thing is, what's the situation in East Germany now? Industry, jobs?
You mean right now?
Right now.
Okay.
I
tried to go to that point. There are a few steps in between, if this is all right. We got some half an hour left. But to this point of the 9th of November, is there any questions?
Well, I have a question. At the point of the division, way back between making East and West Germany, is it correct that that was not a people's choice, but that was a political decision?
To divide East and West Germany?
Yes.
Of course, because, you know, I mean, about the situation of National Socialism and Hitler, and they were afraid that it would be a character of German people. Everybody in the world was afraid that it belongs to the character of German people, that they will be always able to follow authorities, whatever they say, whatever they will plan, they will do it. So I think it was not the worst to divide the country somehow. What, you know, we have up to today, there is a part of Germany what is not full, but where very many British forces, and there is a part with French forces and a part with American forces, as you know.
But it had nothing to do with people choosing.
East Germany was then, that's right, it was just negotiation after the war. I mean, there was hardly anybody to negotiate with, because most of the responsible persons committed suicide, as you might
remember. Yeah, and so the only people that were maintaining a country of East Germany or West Germany were authorities. It wasn't a people that had made the
decision. It was, actually, as a matter of fact, it was authorities from USA, Russia, and so on, you know.
Like, I don't
the difference was
part of this one or that one. You agreed for me, and so...
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything to me, kind of thing.
Somehow, yeah.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, Western countries said, well, after a while they give up to divide those sections so strongly. So there was, you couldn't feel what's the difference between the British and the French section. But the Russians, you know, they wanted to give their people another chance. And there have been quite a lot of people who dreamed of this socialist country and would follow it. So there were quite a few people, I would say maybe a couple of million people would agree in it, you know, and would wanted this, because they thought the socialist country would be just the opposite of that what we have had before. It's not, you know, not thinking about the fact that the Russian socialism was somehow the same system, dictatorship, with another, you know, sign in front of it. And the thing is, what you might not know is that the part of Berlin was somehow traded for a big part of East Germany. So before the armies went much further on, and they traded a broad piece of the later East Germany for this little piece of Berlin. And so Berlin became this strange situation that it sited just in the middle of East Germany. So if you want to travel to West Berlin, you always had to go via, use a plane, or you have to go through twice, through East Germany. And that made it very complicated.
You say go through twice, you mean go through two gates?
Yeah.
A gate,
yeah.
A corridor, and then a gate.
That's right. Okay. All right, so then there have been changes in you know, there were followers of Erich Honecker who just, you know, were some kind of intermission persons to release more and more, to give it more and more changes. And finally, they accepted even elections, what have been in April, then in April 1990. I cannot tell anything about, because I have been in South America at those days, because I already got, I didn't like, you know, very soon everybody started to talk about reunification in the West. The East didn't speak about it in the beginning at all. They said, we are the people. Not, they didn't say, we are one people, or, you know. And that was, what they wanted is to have their own country, but, you know, just the freedom of speech and the freedom of traveling. They didn't want the capitalism at the first place. Of course, many wanted a better TV set, a nice car, and so on. They wanted the advantages of capitalism, but not the disadvantages. In East Germany, you didn't have to care for anything. Everything was organized, and that is really the point what makes it now very complicated for East German people. They have now to look for their security, for, you know, for hospitals, for anything has to be organized, taxes, they have to pay taxes now, and so on. The rents change, the you know, shopping system, everything changed, what was taken care of from the government before. So, in this first time, my personal experience was that, of course, East German people, especially in Berlin, because it was just, you know, so close and a big, big city, moved in to go shopping in West Berlin. As you might know, perhaps, the rule was, before we had a law that say everybody from East Germany who comes to visit West Germany will get some kind of greeting present in an amount of about $60 or $70. And that was, you know, I mean, that's easy to say something like that. Only people over 65 will be allowed to move over. So you could afford it quite easily. But no, all of a sudden, 70 million people moved over up to December, and then the new year started, and, you know, you can take this every year. So people moved over, got the money, and you know, spent it immediately in West Berlin. So it became a very prosperous place, West Berlin, as a matter of fact. And most of those things, what they bought first, I don't know, what do you guess would that be?
What?
Yeah, it was little radios, you know, these transistor radios or cassette players. And as strange as it is, you know, it was always a stereotype of us. The people in East Germany want citrus fruits like oranges and grapefruits and bananas, because that's what they don't get. And as more places or spaces opened in the wall that people could go through, as more you saw their big piles of banana shells. I mean, it's really mad. And, of course, coffee. So what, of course, clever West, not just West German, West European companies did, they moved all to the borders, to the entrances, and given away coffee for free or for very few money. You know, all those things, silk stockings, all those things what you didn't get before, very cheap. So those people get already used to the special trademark or whatever. And that's the way it worked very soon. However, they spent their money in West Berlin, and what happened is they exported into West Berlin to stand in line. We haven't been used to that. So all of a sudden we have to stand in line to get our food and everything. So what it meant for West Berlin people is that they could go shopping only from Monday to through Thursday. Friday, Saturday, no chance. And the first time in my life I found out that shops could be sold out. Never have seen that before in West Germany, of course in East Germany. So you know, that was in effect. So at the very beginning, people were celebrating, and then in West Berlin, people started, you know, shit, I gotta wait so long for this, you know, I just wanted to buy some coffee, and now these Easterns, you know, got all this coffee, and why don't they drink their own shit, and so on. You know? That's the way. And that's exactly how it works. The Western became more and more arrogant. We know everything about life. You know, we can drive big cars, what are three times as fast as yours and smell half as much and whatever, you know, and are twice as big and half as noisy and whatever. And so there started to become a little tension, you know. On one hand, of course, everybody wanted to see West Berlin, to see West Germany, just, you know, at the border, those towns. And it was always a way, when I was traveling to East Berlin to visit friends or family, there was everything just gray. There was just one color, that was dark red, what they use for propagandas as a background. And everything else, even the letters there, were gray. And then you go with a subway, two stations, and you're right in the middle of West Berlin, and everything is full of colors. People are having colors, you know, shining colors. All the advertisements, the light settings of the theaters and cinemas and so on. So it is really some kind of cultural shock, what even I felt always when I came back. And they, of course, wanted to see this. And at the beginning, everybody welcomed them, but then more and more, it becomes more and more tension. And yeah, so that somehow, when you want, so the trouble started, though. And the main thing was always the arrogancy of West German people. What is really the thing what I
well, West felt very happy. Were West Germans not as interested in going over to East Germany? They had more freedom to go over there in the first place?
Yeah, well, there were, of course, some traveling to their families in when they had a car, so, you know, to visit them, but that was very rare. Even before, most people from the very west of West Germany, I have been living in Cologne and in Munich, so those people I learned to know there, never even thought about going to Berlin or going to East Germany. It was just far away, and even close friends of mine from my hometown said, we will not visit you because of this way through East Germany, because we just dislike it, and we are afraid that we will get into prison. My father, for example, was some 10 years ago, he just wanted to visit relatives, and they took him for a couple of hours into the police station to question him because he was a judge, and they thought maybe he knows something what might be of interest for him. And so he couldn't travel anymore to East Germany for that.
What was the contiguous border between East and West? Was that a fence, or was that a minefield, or what was the actual dividing between
okay.
East and West?
The Berlin Wall is, of course, just a symbol.
In Berlin?
Yeah. What it was is a couple of fences seated one after another with a broad red or yellow stripe in between, let's say some 300 meters broad. And that was a minefield that was self-shooting instruments, so if you walk through, there would be guns shooting at you, even though there is nobody. Every 300 or 400 meters, there was a tower where people were round the clock watching with their spectacles, what's going on, is there any movement. The Iron Curtain was, as a matter of fact, as they used to say, I didn't prove it or checked it, the strongest border would ever have been built up. It was just perfect. I mean, there was hardly any chance to go through.
Yes, the Iron Curtain was also electric.
Yeah, they got electricity on it, and there were so many fences. And
In July of last year, we were on a cruise through the Baltic Sea, and we stopped at Lübeck. That was one day, and there was that was the dividing line there. And they took us out there and showed us they still had the fences up. The fortifications had been withdrawn, but we could see it across here 300 yards. There was nothing there at this point. And you could just visualize how severe that thing was.
So
yes,
they had guard dogs.
They had guard dogs and everything. And,
yeah.
And the people were just exhilarated to think that thing is gone now.
Imagine that unemployment, so many thousands of people have been in charge to watch those porters. Well, what's their job now, you know?
My wife and I were just in Germany for the last 3 weeks, and we visited in East Germany quite a bit. I was surprised talking with some young people on the train on a number of occasions.
young people who lived in East Germany, presently living in East Germany, the resentment that I heard within themselves about, they said, the older people wanted the unification, we young people are unemployed, having to have a visa to get into West Germany, a card. At least one of the Masons told me he was visiting his sister in Heidelberg and he had to carry a card. He just must have been 20 years old to go to Heidelberg. And West Germans, he said, did not have to do that to come to East Germany. I was wondering if you
could... When is it?
This was 2 weeks ago.
No, that can't be. That does not exist.
He said he had to have it for 2 years.
Unless he had a job.
In October 9th. To prove that he was actually going to go back to Leipzig where he lived and not stay in Heidelberg where his sister was.
Okay. Okay, that's a different thing, yeah. They have because of the problems of unemployment on both sides, and that they were afraid that all the capable people, especially from hospitals, I don't know, let's say 30% of the doctors moved to West Germany to make their fortune there, and almost 50% of the people who were working at hospitals, they have been moving all to the West, and that didn't work out anymore. So they said, I mean, we have to organize it in a way that is bad. We need people in the East, and we have no flats in the West. We have flats in the East, so we have to organize it somehow like this. Yeah, it might be that they now brought up this kind of thing in order to make sure that not everybody will move. You know, most people moved over to the West because they thought it's much quicker and easier to make your fortune there. You know, to get a good job there and work there, and you know, everything is organized. The whole traffic system isn't built up yet in East Germany. You know, you hardly, at the beginning, you couldn't make a phone call from East if you wanted to build up a plant or buy anything or, you know, prepare anything. You couldn't do anything. So meanwhile, they have built up some, I think, 25,000 more phone connections between East and East.
One high school young lady was telling me of her mother, East Germany again, now being unemployed and not knowing, you know, how she's going to get a job,
yeah.
Her mother. And I guess that's what I had reference to, that maybe it was wrong assumption on my part, but I seem to get some really resentment on the part of those presently
yeah.
living in East Germany now,
yeah.
not the ones who left, but those who are presently there,
yeah.
in terms of the West, and, you know, the big cars, the know-it-all kind
yeah.
of attitude. I don't know if that's widespread or not. But
yeah, well, I'd say so. The unemployment in the East was, when I left now 2 weeks ago, about 9.5% in East. And, you know, it's going down in the West and it's going high and higher in the East. That's no wonder, because the socialist system has some kind of hidden unemployment. There were 10 people working, doing a job what 2 or 3 people could do as well. And so, of course, it is very difficult, you know, then in order to make it work economically efficiency, to get all at once a new job, even though they had to build up plants. All these factories and plants they had, they still used somehow the techniques of the 40s and 50s. And so that made it quite difficult then.
If people were capable of learning lessons from history, what would you have them remember?
You want me to finish the session? If I understood you right, you want me what I wish people would learn from this.
You said they don't learn from history.
Yeah. Well, one thing is, you know, that they tear down the Berlin Wall, because I think that is really a symbol for mankind. And when I say mankind, I mean mankind. I would have liked it to leave at least a little of it to show. Because, I mean, if I'm going to tell my kids someday that there has been a border just through houses, through farms, through villages, through families, I mean, how can they believe that? I mean, how can they... Everybody who has been to see the border, has been to Berlin to see it, even though he has been prepared and known about it before. Which really, I mean, it was unspeakable, the situation, when they got to see what's going on. How does it look like? You look over and you even might wave to people standing there, and they will never be allowed, that's what they thought of 2 years ago, just to move these couple of hundred meters. I come to that.
I got two questions. First one is saying the social problems that have resulted in the initiative to get it regarding the people of former East Germany. There has been articles that are read in newspapers.
There have been what? Articles, yeah?
Yeah, and see that it's taking momentum. That there's a rise of this sense of people in, like, okay, young people in East Germany taking on to racism and the
yeah.
rise of neo-Nazism. Can you just
yeah.
comment on that? And
okay.
the other question that I have is, if you look at countries that continue to be divided along the lines of superpower politics of strategic interest and maintaining certain policies in order to preserve the military economic interest, particularly in a situation like North and South Korea, those are also people that are divided almost along the same lines as East Germany because they are one people. How would you view the situation there, having experience what has happened in Germany? Okay, the division there.
Mm-hmm.
How would you comment that it be resolved? Because I think it's an issue that people cannot just stand a blind eye on.
Yeah.
It's not different.
Okay, answering the second question would be somehow an answer for that fellow who just left. The first thing, the racism, that's a really, really concern, you know. It has to do very much with aggressions, that people, young people, have been risen in a society where they couldn't do what they wanted. And in a society where there have been very few foreigners compared, I mean, West Berlin, for example, is the second biggest Turkish town in the world. East Berlin, there have been just a very few people from Vietnam, people from Cuba, who came there. They were somehow sold like slaves for working. So East German people were not used very much to foreigners. And young people had these aggressions because they say, we have unemployment and those folks take us the last work what is left. We don't want them here. And they let all their aggressions out in the soccer stadium and you know against foreign people, and so there's a kind of rise of neo-fascism as well in it, and I think it has very much to do that the government and the people of East Germany didn't really face the problem of National Socialism, that they didn't really work it out, you know, it was just lines they had to learn by heart, propaganda lines that this is a non-fascist country and this is so and so and so and so. And so it becomes now somehow denying what has been before by, you know, rising again this kind of racism. In West Germany, very many people are very concerned about it, and there have been already a couple of fights in Berlin between East and West Berlin people. It turns out that it, as terrible it is, it looks like it will be, well, there are about, I would say, 150 or 200 fascist leaders around, and some, they say about 10, 15,000 sympathizers. So they got much more news than they are, even though I do not agree and I feel concerned about it. The image is much stronger than the reality of this racism. Yeah. The other question about North and South Korea. Yeah. Well, time's running up, and maybe I prepared it wrong, so to start so early. However, for me, I didn't like at all the time schedule of, quote, reunification, unquote. First of all, because people never, in East and West, couldn't really think it over. You know, there were some people who said, yeah, reunification, and made other people to think about that as well. And it is somehow in our constitution that someday, when there will be the possibility, there will be the, you know, the chance for East German counties to, as I said, to join into the Federal Republic. So I do not like that. I was impressed and interested in the fact of what's going on, looking forward to 92, when somehow Europe tries to reunify somehow, or to unify in a specific way. And all those steps we went through, like unification of trade and currency, and later on, you know, somehow being one whole country, so will be taking place perhaps with Europe, what is much more complicated because you have much bigger differences between the countries, the cultures, the languages, and so on, and the backgrounds.